Coming up.
There was a time when it's like that winter where it's like super cold, right? That day we had 3 child DOAs, right? Even when it's a
dead
DOA,
on arrival, for those of you who don't know.
Even when it's a DOA where there's like nothing, obviously you can't do anything. The patient, the parents will come and they'll still think there's something you can do. Mm. And you like, you still break the bad news. It hurts. Mm. Yeah. That kind of thing.
No,
is
it
gone.
Really does. It really does.
So can I just say something about that? Because I think our feelings in those situations are very valid. And I think people assume that healthcare practitioners is just another case for us. Mm. And I think what I can take away from that is that...
Hello and welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Man with the Gents Clinic. 6 South African male medical doctors on a mission to change the way in which we perceive healthcare. Joined with us in the studio today, we have a very esteemed guest, a new, brand new pediatrician, Dr. Nogukanya Kanyile.
Lenake,
sorry, I apologize. She's also a wife.
Thank you.
She did that white thing where she double-barreled.
Gotta say the whole thing.
Yeah, okay.
No, but I had to double-barrel.
Yeah. You had to. Yeah. Because you're a doctor.
A brand
as
well.
You deserve to have your...
No, but also, my father-in-law and my sister-in-law are both doctors. So if I'm now Dr. Lenake, I'm the third one, which is... No, I'm me.
So, oh, okay. So you needed
so
to have your own one.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. But that's very white, I must say. You may as well be Nogukanya Smith-Jones.
Smith-Jones.
All right. But thank you very much for joining us. You know, I know you, so it's weird to introduce you. I don't know if there's something you would preferably like to say about yourself, but we all went to university together.
Yeah.
Dr. Kanyile Lenake was a year above us in medical school.
I was the senior, even though I'm the smallest in here.
Yes.
But
so,
I was the...
Yeah,
I'm still
so
senior,
she was
by the, way.
The senior, junior-ish, whatever. And yeah, I mean, is there something that you wanted to say about yourself before we begin? Is there something specific people need to know about you?
Yeah, I think the one way that I like to summarize myself is that I'm a real girl in a big world tasked by an awesome God to serve his people. So I look at my life in 3 pillars, one being the doctor. So I'm a specialist pediatrician by qualification. I'm also then, in terms of the change maker part, the vice president of an organization called Mental Matters. Mm-hmm. So we seek to destigmatize mental illness, but also promote mental wellness in society. Okay. And then the change maker moves on to the keynote speaker. So I enjoy sitting on panels like this, having these conversations, but also emceeing events that are impactful. I don't just go there for vibes. Like, you know, if the event is not something that's going to change a conversation, influence an idea that people have in society about mental health or society, it doesn't really fit with me. So that's kind of like a summary, yeah. And then obviously, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a family member, I serve at church. So yeah.
I actually would have thought you would start with that first and then the other pillars.
You know, sometimes I always like think, okay, which one should I start with? But I think when it comes to a setting like this, it's more professional.
Yeah.
We'll get into the personal stuff and we'll talk about it. So I thought, let me get the business out the way.
Because Naseem is so quiet, first question for Nogukanya, what do you want to ask her?
What is Mental Matters?
That's a very good question. So Mental Matters South Africa is an organization I started with my friend Gugu. Gugu Masondo has been living with bipolar 2, and she was admitted to a psychiatric facility for about 21 days. Mm-hmm. And when she came out, a lot of people had questions for her. What is this? Why are you on the treatment? Blah, 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 blah. She decided to put together an event where she asked me to speak about depression, what the medication was about, why we need the medication, what are the symptoms, etc. And then she also had other people speaking about their experience with mental health. From there, we then realized that there was a big need for people not just to understand what the actual diagnosis of depression, anxiety, etc. is, but also what the impacts of the treatment plans are on not only doctors who are giving the plans, but also people who have to consume the medications, etc. So we do seminars. We also host events and kind of pop-ups and talks like this where people will you know, focus on a topic, and we specifically curate guests as well as speakers, either being healthcare professionals who can talk from their professional experience or people living with the mental illness or mental health challenge that we're talking about. So, for example, this year we did one on parenting where we spoke about grief. What is it like being a parent who's going through grief and explaining that to your kids? We spoke about infertility because there's so many mental health challenges around infertility and people don't know how to handle that until you're there. So we want you to know what it is and also have the experience of what the psychiatric evaluation needs to be, etc., if you need to go into adoption. And then the last thing we spoke about was just overall mental health. Why you as a parent or someone who's taking care of a child needs to maintain your mental health so that it can impact your child. And as a pediatrician, I know mental health in parents can actually affect neurodevelopmental outcomes in children. So that's also a very important conversation for us to have. So we basically just get people in the room together to have a conversation. And I love it because it's a safe space. We're trying to get them in to come in more. So we always encourage women to bring their husbands, their brothers, their uncles, whoever. And we started to see more men coming into it and having a conversation in a safe space.
That's lovely. Great stuff.
Thank you.
I was just thinking to myself, we actually had a guest that we spoke with speaking about like mental health, suicide and things like that. Have you guys ever considered having sort of a seminar just for men discussing?
Given that there's a massive disparity.
Exactly, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, so we had one in 2019, just before COVID hit, where there were only male speakers. So we had Kaya Langa, who was the MC. We had we had Sakanda Kalla. He was also there as one of the psychologists.
Oh, I know him, yeah.
Okay. Yes, and then we also had Dr. Amu Mangani. He was also coming from a medical point of view. We had a lot of men there. It was very difficult to get the men in the room. But what I realize is men need spaces just for men. So even if I organize the event, men are going to be very hesitant to come because you guys want to talk to other men about your problems. You don't necessarily think that you can be free and open in a space where there are women. And I completely agree with that. But I also think we need to get a balance where as women, if we don't understand how these things affect you, we won't be able to support you. And I think we need a balance of both. So we actually had an event a couple of weeks ago where we kind of facilitated a session with a well-known, self-care brand. And we just had men in the audience. They sat down. We were able to sit with them and say, okay, I'm going to facilitate you guys talk. And the one thing they kept saying is we want the space for ourselves. So I'm challenging all the men. Mental Matters is going to organize a male-only event. We'll give you the venue. We'll give you the food. But you guys have to run the program. And I'm still looking for the men. So if you guys want to, you can just.
Just let you know.
We're always available. Always keen.
We definitely are. And we just
hook up
that,
the food and the venue.
We were thinking of organizing something for men.
Yes.
Around just male problems, not specifically mental health, but as one of the stations there where guys just sit and sort of bond. But we wanted to talk more about, you know, things that men really, really care about, like erectile dysfunction. Guys really care about that stuff.
Yeah. Hold on, we like also care about it.
No, I don't know why. Men care about it. We know you guys care about it. Because generally when you start caring about it, then they start caring about it. And then they come to us. www.jensclinic.co.za. So, we've had patients who literally were on the verge. Because one thing that I think not just women, but not anyone really thinks about is, For men, when you have erectile dysfunction, you can't have sex. That's it. That's game over for you. Yeah, you can foreplay, you can do whatever else you want, but you cannot do the act. So we've had patients who literally like 2 years, 3 years, no erection. No erection equals no sex. No sex for 3 years.
Yeah, in a marriage especially.
In a marriage, in a relationship, damaging. Even alone, that is a long time not to be able to experience that pleasure because it's part of normal, natural life. And so even something as what may seem as menial as not being able to have an erection can literally cause a man to say, I'd rather take my life.
And I think that's why it's important that we bring women into a conversation like that. Because I think with a woman, we just assume that if you are being moody, if you just are pushing me away all the time, you just don't love me, you're cheating somewhere else. Mm. But if I then understand that, no, this is a problem that you're having, we also need to know as women the language we need to use when it happens. Because some women are just like, oh, so when you just can't get it up. And then it's just like, no, whoa. Now you're going to push him away even more. Yeah. We also need to understand when we say certain things, how it makes you feel. And we also need to know how physically, emotionally, even romantically, it can affect us, and what other things we can do. Because women are very good at finding other ways that are non-sexual to bond with their partners. Mm-hmm. So if we can have a partnership between a man and a woman to say, listen, babe, I really want to do this with you, but I can't. What are our options? Can we use toys? Can we just have a romantic dinner together? Can we just have a conversation? Those are still ways that we can bond that don't necessarily involve the sexual aspect of it. But then we can still then get the help earlier instead of waiting, like you're saying, 2-3 years for something to happen. Because it's detrimental, the silence that builds between couples because of this issue.
And
I mean, I've even heard of stories where, you know, someone has become abusive. Husband has become a drug, you know, sort of addict. Because they just can't vent out all this frustration they have, and they don't have... they don't know what to say to their partner. Like you're saying, language being a problem. I mean, you tell someone that it's, you know, you're not, you don't feel like it or whatever, and they say to you, no, you just can't get it up. You know, to her, it's you can't get it up. She's not teasing. You just can't get it up.
No, I mean,
but to you, it's such an insult. It's such a
it hurts. Your ego. It stings the soul.
Yeah,
and that's why when we have these consultations with a lot of men, sometimes they literally just want to talk to someone.
Yes.
They literally just want to be like, hey man, do you understand? Because the majority of men, whether you're healthy, fit, in a good relationship, you're going to go through erectile dysfunction at least at some point.
Mm.
Either you're tired, you're anxious, you're worried, you're stressed. Mm. There may not necessarily be a biological reason for why you're experiencing it. And what happens is a lot of men go through an anxiety loop of, I'm not able to perform. She's not happy. I can't get it up. Why can't I get it up? And then it never gets up.
Yeah.
And so for a lot of men, they feel almost trapped in this doomsday cycle, which they just cannot get out of. And hopefully they come to us. We give them some treatment, break the cycle, actually listen. I think just listening to a guy going, I have nowhere to turn, and my partner doesn't understand, and she's harsh towards me, and she doesn't understand me, or she insults me. And there have been times in certain occasions where I've literally said, look, get your wife to join you on the next consult. I want to speak to both of you. I want you to understand that this is not, firstly, it's not, you cannot blame yourself. I've had the most craziest. I had one guy, one consultation, the woman was like, she was fed up. He was trying to bend over backwards to do whatever he could to make it work. Literally bought her toys. She was like, I don't want your toys. Then she was starting to suggest, I think it's me, so I'm going to bring another woman here.
Sure.
I want you to, I want to see that you can't get it up for her either. Then I'll be sure. And I was like, this is now completely toxic.
Yeah. And I think, I always say this, mental and physical illness is not an excuse for bad behavior. So even if you are going through a challenge that's happening, that's really difficult for you to deal with, you're not allowed to behave badly to me, and I'm not allowed to receive bad treatment from you. So in that example, you bringing, if this is his wife, you are now asking me to commit adultery just to prove to you that this is a physical ailment that I have, when I'm clearly telling you that this is what's happening. And I think that's why, because men don't have the freedom and the safety to open up and talk about an issue without the fear of judgment, things just get deeper and they get prolonged. And then it's not just the issue of the erectile dysfunction, it's everything else he has to do around that. He's avoiding her, he's not taking her on dates because he's afraid that if he starts having romantic dates, she's gonna think, hey, okay, something's gonna happen.
Exactly
They're not gonna go away on holiday, they're just gonna keep themselves busy, he's gonna keep himself busy with work, she's gonna feel distant, and then there's a whole nother world that opens up. So why I think it's important that as women we are brought into these conversations is because I always ask my husband, and my husband, anyone who knows like the two of us, I'm the loud one, and he's very reserved. He's just like chilled or whatever. And it's sometimes difficult to get him out of that space. So sometimes I just have to ask him, are you fine? And wait. If he says he is fine, I leave it at that. If he says he's not fine, I say, okay, do you want to talk about it? And I keep quiet. I don't say anything because sometimes it's like you're saying, men just want to talk. And I think another helpful thing for women to do when it comes to having a conversation that's difficult with your husband or your partner or whatever is saying, do you want me to help or do you want me to listen or do you want me to hurt? When I say help, it's like, do you need a solution? Do you want me to listen? It's like, okay, am I just here as a sounding board? Or do you want me to hurt? Do you want me to nitpick the things in the situation that could potentially cause problems for us in the future? Because sometimes, even if you're talking about it, I'm saying, okay, I hear you, but you can't just not talk to me about your erectile dysfunction. I need to know what your treatments are going to be. I need to know how long that I need to sit with you in the dark. Because if you don't do that, I'm going to feel like you're lying or you're hiding things from me. So that's the hurt that I'm talking about. Not that me, I'm going to hurt you. But these are the things that are going to hurt our relationship.
Yeah. Some of the standard advice men get when they go for these consults, they say, is, oh no, you should communicate with your partner. Go and tell your partner what's happening in all of this. But the common thing I see happening is that they don't feel it's a safe space, their partner, imagine. They use that against them and they won't understand what's happening, right? So they see it as, I can't explain anything to my partner. They won't understand. That's why some of the best consults are actually two people, the partner and the doctor, so they can get everything out and explain properly what's happening.
Yeah, that's why I love pediatrics, because we believe in like family-centered approaches and multidisciplinary approaches. We don't do anything just with the child. It has to involve a child, a parent, a caregiver, a blah, 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 blah. And I think that needs to extend to adult medicine all the time, because even though this person is coming to you and they are the ones sitting in your consultation room, they have a whole society of people around them that probably depend on them. And especially if you're dealing with men, they're probably the breadwinner.
Yeah.
Or if they're not actively working at the moment, there's issues around why they are not the breadwinner. And that's going to be physical, psychological, financial, etc. And that's all going to affect, on top of the erectile dysfunction, his ability to provide mentally, his ability to improve his self-esteem, to go into an interview and like say, okay, you know what, I'm here. It becomes very difficult for him to shine in the world, because now he's got all of the stuff sitting at the back. So I love that you always ask, Suhail, that the family or the partner comes into the consultation, because there's nothing that can happen, especially with men in isolation. There's always a woman around that's kind of like needing some kind of information, has her own questions. And I also feel like, especially in our society in South Africa, we respect the opinions of doctors. So if I hear my man say it, I'm like, are you sure? But if the doctor is now repeating this, it kind of like solidifies it and also validates your man.
And that's why we want like platforms like this podcast to take off and really get traction, because this is an easier way. In some ways, it's not like I'm sitting in a consultation, even if it's online, which all of our consults are, and I'm telling you like, hey, you need to listen to your man and you need to. Now we're chatting about it.
We're
just discussing these types of issues. And that's also another reason why we started this podcast. So I think that when it comes to men's mental health, firstly, very important that men have an outlet to discuss with other men, because they have they find it easier to relate, find it easier to share without the feeling of being judged.
Which is something we need to escape, by the way, because I think you guys, both of you, highlighted something very important. With most of the consults I've had, the partner is usually in the background. And now that I think about it, so the partner feels, okay, so maybe if I get man-to-man chats, maybe it will work, you know? Just listen in. I don't need to be part of this. Because, I mean, she's probably tried so many ways to reach out to this
guy. Let me tell you something. We've tried everything. we try everything and we're like, why is it not working? And even like with me and my relationship, I realize that there's some things that I will never understand. It doesn't matter how well this guy explains it to me.
So you're a rare woman. Well. Let me tell you.
Like, I'm just like, you know what? Do you need to call your dad? Do we need to call your friends? Do you need to have a boys' night? Because I don't like what's happening here,
yeah.
But I know I can't fix it. So do something about it with the men in your life.
Yeah. No, I think your partner doesn't know you if she doesn't do it. Your partner doesn't know you.
Because I got cows, I'm telling you now.
If she doesn't do that. Because, I mean...
I got cows. There are very few women that can really, like, internally understand this. Like, on that level, where they can go, you know what? This is beyond me. You know, a lot of women often will say, why do you not... In my own relationship, a big problem I faced was, like, why don't you, or why can't you lean on me for XYZ problem?
Can I tell you why?
Sure, okay.
You know, this thing of bromance is a problem. Because you might be the great friend. You're always the great friend. You are the loyal friend. You are the friend who doesn't cause problems. Mara, you've got a few friends in your group that are a little bit, you know? Mm. And the problem is... Now, I've been out with you and your friends, and I've seen those friends do the things, and these are guys who are like your closest bros, and you're in a WhatsApp group, and you talk every day. Now, I know you need other men to talk to. I don't want you talking to that man.
Yeah, like Naseem. You want me to talk to Naseem?
Naseem, you're too quiet. Nati, you've got things.
Not Nas. I'll protect you.
But I think, like, what worries us about women is here we are all having a good time. We're all hanging out. And don't forget, we were dating you. Then we started, like, hanging out with you more. So we've kind of seen you guys in a social setting. And now suddenly, these guys were doing funny things. And now that we're married, now they just stopped doing them. And they're good guys. And then I have to trust that you are dealing with our relationship issues with the same people that are actively, I've seen them doing nonsense. So what is important, I think, as men, is you need to hold one another accountable within your groups of friends, especially when you get into marriages.
Yeah.
Like when you're single, I'm like, hey, the game is the game.
Exactly, yeah.
But once you get married, it becomes very important that you guys hold each other accountable and that your partners see that. Not necessarily that you're on the phone with him and then you say, baby, you won't believe what Thabo did. Nhlanhla was doing that. No, you don't need to tell me what happened. But it needs to be active where you're saying, you know what? I'm just worried about Nhlanhla. I want to go and talk to him. There's just something I'm concerned about. Mm-hmm. Let us also see that your friendship group is a reliable circle of people. Because in the same way that, like, if there's a baddie friend of mine that's always in the club, you're going to be like,
Never. You're not hanging out with that person.
Of course. I think, sorry to interrupt, what I was actually referring to is not like even just our interpersonal relationship. Even a thing like, for example, I lost my grandmother last year and I was very close to her. And she was like, why didn't you lean on me more? Or why didn't you like open up to me more? And it took a long time for me to explain, like, but that's not how maybe I or men deal. Like, I needed to just be there for my family. I needed to be the guy, like, the doctor called me when things went down and she passed away. I needed to be there. I needed to step up, inform the family. I needed to be the responsible one, make funeral arrangements. And my partner wanted me to be more emotional and, like, hey, lean on, you know. And that's just not the response. Maybe that's the expected response from her side, but not on my side. I was like, I just need to be a man now. And I'll deal with that when I deal with that later, you know. So I think that there is, you know, a divide between men and women in terms of how we want to be communicated with. Like this rule, this three-way rule, you know, what is it? Heal,
listen, or hurt.
Heal, listen, or hurt. I think that's brilliant. And it can work both ways, definitely. Yeah. I think for the most part, women just want to have the listen part. They don't want you to heal them. They don't want you to give them the solution to the problem.
Even if you give me the solution, it ain't going to work because I already know the solution.
Just listen to me. I just want you to listen most of the time, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's good that you at least, does your partner also with you, does he go like, hey, I'm also going to give you the option. Do you want?
So he calls me Varumbat. The reason he calls me Varumbat / Aventura is because I cry. I cry for everything. I could be post-call, I'll be crying. I could be hungry, I'll cry. I could be happy, I'll cry. I could be angry, I'll cry. So sometimes, like when I start crying, he says, okay, are you crying because you need to just release? Are you crying because you're tired? Like, do you want me to help you with a problem? And I'm like, no, I'm just tired post-call. And the call was very difficult and I cry. And then he had to learn that over time. But sometimes I'm just like, and like this person is annoying me. I want to just think. And he's like, okay, do you want me to help you? I'm like, yeah, I need to figure out a plan to destroy them. And he goes, okay, we're not doing that. Everybody calm down. And sometimes just the talking through, even though I'm asking for a solution, he realizes that, oh, you just needed me to listen to you go through this emotion. And then I get to the solution. I'm like, oh, I actually didn't need your help, but thank you for listening to me, you know? Yeah.
What about hurt? You ever choose the hurt option?
So the hurt option
And how does that work? Who gets hurt? So he gets hurt, you get hurt.
So the hurt option basically says, what's the weakness in this plan that we've created? So if we use an example of erectile dysfunction, if you are going through the situation, you need to go and see a healthcare professional that I'm not necessarily going to be in a consultation with. And I understand the first one is a bit tricky because they might ask you questions about your past that I don't want to know. I don't want to know. I always say there's AK and BK. There's before Kanye and after Kanye. I don't need to know BK. Okay.
You know, I've never understood people who get fascinated about what used to happen in your life before we were together. I'm like, I don't want to know what you used to do when I wasn't around. I don't want to know.
No. So anyway,
that's between you and the Lord.
You know, and your doctor.
Yeah.
So for me, like everything that happens after me is important because this point on, I need to know, okay, if you want to have private conversations with your doctor, you need to take medication. So for example, if you are going to take a, you know, vasodilator and we are running a marathon, now you're doing Hyrox. I need to be aware that if you start complaining of chest pain, hey, this guy is on medication that could potentially do X, Y, and Z, right? I need to also know.
So practical. That's the practical.
That's the one thing. The second thing is, if you are going to be seeing your doctor and you've lied to me before about other things, and now your doctor is saying, no, you need to do these kinds of things, how do I know you're giving me the full story? So I need to then tell you that my hurt is that I'm worried that you could be lying to me because maybe you want to protect me or maybe you don't want me to know everything. Mm. So it's not necessarily saying this thing is going to happen. It's saying that these are the points that could potentially hurt me and these are the weaknesses in this plan. This is how I, as your partner, would feel better with this plan. And you can then say, okay, I would feel comfortable having you in one consultation, but not everything.
100%.
Yeah, the hurt is a bit tricky. It's not so easy to understand.
It's a very difficult conversation because it means we have to be honest about our vulnerabilities. I have to say, I don't trust you to tell me everything that the doctor's going to tell you. I don't trust you to, when you do have like proper function, whatever, and now you're good to go. You've cheated on me before. I don't trust that you're not going to go back and cheat. Do I even want you to fix your erectile dysfunction? Let's start there. Because if you've cheated on me before and now you get your function back and I've supported you through all of this, you're going to have your confidence back. So now you're going to. So all of those things are difficult conversations to have. But if we don't have the hurt conversation, it's not going to get a solution that's going to be beneficial for both of us. But it's also, I understand, it's a very difficult conversation to have.
It's really a tough one.
Yeah.
And then peds. How did you choose peds? Like I said earlier, you really strike me. I think you should have gone into psychiatry, even though you might think otherwise. But why peds?
I don't think I would be good for psychiatry because I talk too much.
And you need to let the other person talk.
Yes, definitely. So the reason I chose pediatrics is because I really love community health education and advocacy. I find that in my life, as just from growing up, my parents were really involved in the community. My family was in the church. My dad is a politician. My mom is in HR and transformation. So a lot of my life revolved around the community, even in school. When I went to university, the options I chose were to either do something that was not going to bore me, it was going to help me to teach people something, and also it was going to allow me to advance my career options. And so it was medicine, accounting, or teaching. And so I got into medicine. And then as I went through internship, it was going to be anesthetics, internal medicine, or peds. Hated anesthetics because I did it at Ward 20 at Barra. I said, never again.
Anesthetics you did at Ward 20?
No. Sorry. Internal medicine. Okay. I did at Barra. I said, absolutely not. Anesthetics, I didn't like the fact that I didn't get to talk to patients a lot because you just...
I mean, you can talk to them while they're asleep. And then they don't respond, so it's even better for you.
But I like talking to people who talk back to me. And so what I really loved about pediatrics was you get to engage with kids, and kids don't lie. If they are fine, they're like running around the ward, you know, when I discharge TTO, oral medication, fish chocolate, yeah. Home. The parents are also excited to go home because they're like, they don't want to stay here. But also, I enjoyed that in our society, when I help a mom realize the danger signs and how to treat her child, she's not only fixing and helping her child, she's helping the community. Because there's a neighbor, there's Usmanbani's child, there's Umakelwane's child from next door or whatever. So I'm kind of helping her with information that she can realize danger signs. And then when she comes in, she says, doctor, I looked at the danger signs at the back of the book. These are the ones that the baby has. I'm really worried. Mm. The baby has diarrhea. I gave them the sorrel. I mixed it this way. They're not helping. And then they come back. So it really empowers the community so that, one, our healthcare system can be less burdened. Two, moms and communities are empowered with health and information. And three, when I look at advocacy, I look at what are the programs I can support that can really help parents and children improve their own lives in their own space. And that's why Mental Matters is also close to my heart, because I want to give you tools, practical tools. Yeah. If you see someone or you are feeling these symptoms, what are the practical steps you can do before or while you're waiting for a psychiatrist or a psychologist appointment to get there? And so this other thing I love about PEDS is it's multidisciplinary. We can't do anything in pediatrics just as a pediatrician. I need to involve mom, dad, gogo, the family, a social worker, an occupational therapist, a physiotherapist, etc. If there's another condition, you know, I need to get a subspecialty involved. And it's really nice to kind of like, it's like an orchestra. I feel like I'm just bringing everybody together around this child, around this family, and helping them as a unit. Because I really love like seeing how confident moms are. You know, like, especially with our kids with renal conditions, the mom is like, they're on this medication, blah, 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 blah. This is the dose. The doctor changed the dose this month, and then this happened. And they just know so much. And I'm like, yes. And then we have, like, people who are there in internal medicine who are like, I'm pretty high, high, doctor. I'm taking tablets. I don't know what. And I'm like, what do you mean you don't know? You know? So parents and families are really engaged about children. I love that when they call me for a recess for a child, everyone is running. Mm. We're not like, okay, yeah, I'll come. I'm just busy with this. We're all running. 90%, 95% of our recesses are successful. Mm. And it makes me feel pride, like when I look at my juniors and, you know, we are in a recess together. It was hard, whatever. And we do that thing. We bring the baby back. And they're just like crying and they're feeling emotional. And I'm like, yeah, but remember this feeling, because it doesn't always happen this way.
Yeah.
It doesn't always get successful.
I think that for me is one of the reasons why I couldn't deal. That for me.
Yeah. What was hard about it?
It's because, look, you understand in medicine, it's not about failure and success. Mm. You know that you are going to win some and you are going to lose some. But for me, it was, I don't know. Like, from an emotional perspective, I just couldn't.
It hits harder when it's a PEDS.
Yeah. It hits so much harder. I did surgery for a year, and that was what I was initially interested in. And my last rotation of the year was pediatric surgery, and that was the thing that made me go, no, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I cannot do this. And then, you know, adult dies, fine. They've had a life. They've lived.
Like, not like that.
You know, they've lived lives. They've seen something. They've had something. But when you see a lifeless child, I'll never forget. It was 26th December, and 26th December 2019, and on Christmas Day, this family, they're having a little braai get together, whatever, and the child climbed up a pole. The pole fell as he held onto it, and it fell and landed on him. He was at a district hospital, and they didn't pick up that he had a bowel injury from that, just from the force of the pole hitting him. His parents kind of just, dismissed it. They took him late to the hospital. By the time they transferred him to Joburg Gen to go undergo further investigations, he was already way too sick. Mm. And we tried to resuscitate him while he was still at least fairly alert, and we still had a chance. And it took us hours, and then literally, like, myself, my registrar, the consultant herself came when the actual when the child actually crashed, and we pumped this child's chest, and we tried, and it was like half an hour,
And it was like almost 40 minutes. And I kept going. And the registrar is like, we need sale. Like, because, you know, they ask everyone, hey, do you feel comfortable? And I wasn't comfortable. I wasn't comfortable. And when the child finally went and we stepped out of the room and the registrar went to tell the mother, and I still sometimes think about how that scream, that cry that she let out, I was like, I know that it's not my fault. I know this is not in my, this is in the Lord's hands. But something inside me was like, I don't want to feel like this again.
No, I completely understand.
It's a lot of responsibility.
Because even the win, when you do get them back, it doesn't take away that pain.
Yeah. And even like in, there was a time when it was like that winter where it's like super cold, right? That day we had 3 child DOAs, right? Even when it's a
dead
DOA,
on arrival, for those of you who don't
know. Even when it's a DOA where there's like nothing, obviously you can't do anything. The patient, the parents will come and they'll still think there's something you can do. And you like, you still break the bad news. It hurts. That kind of thing.
No, it really does. It really does.
So can I just say something about that? Because I think our feelings in those situations are very valid. And I think people assume that healthcare practitioners is just another case for us. And I think what I can take away from that is that's why I love pediatrics, is because I know, because I rely on my faith so heavily, that I need to do everything physically possible to help this person. Once I have done everything physically possible, if they don't come back to life, then I can trust that the Lord has decided that this is out of my hands. And I think that's what's gotten me through the tough calls. I have cried with families. Let me tell you something. I think there's still some families that follow me on social media and they're just like, girl, you keep crying the same way that you cried with us. I'm like, because I was sad, girl. And it's like, it's not like you're like in the room with them, but the tears come. And I think with families, they also feel a little bit of comfort knowing that as a doctor, this person, this child, this adult meant something to you. Even if you only knew them for that amount of time that you were resuscitating them. I think the other thing that I always console myself with is God gave me the responsibility to break this news to this family because he knew I would give them healing, right? I can get healing because I'm going to go home and I'm going to sleep, I'm going to cry, and then I'm going to wake up and carry on with my life. But this family needed me to tell them in the way that I would be able to tell them, because I'm going to give them love, I'm going to give them empathy, and I'm going to give them compassion. And I think that's what hurts me about our healthcare system. We're so overburdened that we don't get the opportunity to even take 15 minutes to sit with the grieving family and sometimes say nothing. Just sit with them and say, this is what happened. I'm so sorry, your loved one has died, and wait. Because sometimes they just don't want to say anything, they just want to cry. Sometimes they want to ask you questions, sometimes. So it's hard for us as healthcare professionals because we've been taught you are the best of the best. You are the A student. You guys are the cream of the crop. You can do all things. And I think with my faith, I've learned that I can do all things, but God is the one who decides what is the final decision at the end. I just have to keep trying as much as I can. And crying with those families is also okay. It's not a weakness. It just shows you that you care. And I always tell my interns after a recess, even sometimes when it's successful, do you want to take 10 minutes? They're like, we've got so many patients. I'm like, la, the patients are not going anywhere. Do you need 10 minutes? Do you need to go and have something to eat? Take that break. We are here on the floor. We'll be fine.
No, it really takes a really special person to do it. And,
Thank you.
And like you said, I think your faith also plays a huge role in all of this. I think we need to sharpen our faith, gents.
But also the support systems. Because I think because the system has been so broken by generations of just long working hours, corruption that's taken money out of the system, we don't have those abilities. We don't have the ability to support one another, right? So I think in pediatrics is different because I've been in the circuit and we're really kind to one another. Even if someone's going through a lot, there is every now and then. But when you look at specialties like medicine and surgery, you guys are hectic. Yo, I was walking past one of the wards the other day and I just saw people doing this over a patient shouting at each other. And I'm like, first of all, unprofessional. Secondly, why do you feel like it's okay to talk to another human being? Never mind colleague, human being like that. So I think like we as seniors who are now coming out, we've come out of the junior doctor phase. We're not junior doctors anymore. We need to set the standard. And I think anybody who's worked with me will know, even when I'm extremely stressed out, I do not swear. I do not shout at anyone. I do not like, you know, go crazy. I sometimes say to you, okay, guys, I need a break. I'll be right back. I go to my room. I cry for like 5 minutes. Wipe the tears. I used to love COVID because then we could have masks. So people didn't see you. But you come back. And as seniors, we have to do what we can with what we have. And we can't expect junior doctors to take that responsibility on themselves, even though there is a level of like accountability that they have to have. It's too much, guys. We can't do this to one another, irrespective of what resources we have.
And tell me, so now you've obviously, we're all at different junctures in our career path, right? And I always like asking people exactly why they chose to go down the specialization route. Like I was having a chat with one of my cousins who's actually a pediatric surgeon now.
And congrats.
And he, interestingly, I was like, yeah, because surely you want the value for your time. You want more money for that time. And he was like, no. That's not the main reason why I want to do this. I actually want to do this because I know that if I don't progress my knowledge, skills, etc., I can't do the most that I want to do for the patient. There'll always be some sort of a limitation. What do you think is like was the most significant driving factor? And if it's money, you can say it's money.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
And there's nothing wrong. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that. We work damn hard.
Yes.
The actual time that we put in for our careers, even if it's the 6 years plus the 3 years plus the extra 4 to 5, 6, 7 years that it takes you to finally finish your specialization, that time alone is not well compensated for enough, even for the next 5 to 6 years of your career as a consultant, if you have to look at it as an investment, right? So money-wise, I think if that is the reason, there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to say confidently, I wanted more money, so I worked hard enough so that I could make more money.
Yeah. So selfishly, I really enjoyed pediatrics because adults stressed me out. Like, yeah, you guys are a lot. You guys complain. You want me to write sick note for no reason. It stressed me out. But seriously, I went into pediatrics, as I said, to improve my knowledge about community health because I saw that that's the one speciality that actively goes into looking at it. I mean, we have a rotation called COMPEDS. So that helps us understand not just what happens in the, you know, in the tertiary setting, which is the hospitals, and the quaternary setting, which is the specialist hospitals, but also on the ground, primary care clinics, community healthcare centers. Because of that, it helps me understand what level I need to pitch the information that I'm sharing out to people. So if I have a mental matters event, if I'm working with an organization, Marutoli, where they are screening malnutrition, etc., it doesn't help that I'm just targeting that at doctors who are going to go back to work and treat their patients who only come to the hospital. I need people who are going to go into the communities. And so I really found joy in pediatrics because it gave me those exposures. It also forced me to speak in very simple terms because I sometimes have to explain things to 10-year-olds because their mom is not around, they're at work or whatever. And I need to say, listen, this is what I need to put up a drip, for example. This is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. And I need to have the skill set to be able to get them on my side to trust me enough not to hurt them. For adults, you can say, Baba, you need a drip. We need the antibiotics. He's probably going to pull out the next day, but you can fight with him. But with kids, you can't do that. So you have to be sensitive to those topics, which helps me go and talk to other people about menstruation. It helps me use the language, you know, when I wrote our book, Didi Talks, which is a book about menstruation. How do we pitch it to 8 to 13-year-olds in a way that is easy for them to understand, but also comfortable enough for parents to have that conversation with them? I also felt that pediatrics was really my niche because I loved working with the people in peds. There's just a nice flow between seniors and juniors. You don't really feel like, even though you know you're an intern, you don't really feel like you are a junior in the team. I mean, if we look at the one example of our head of department, he's got like a list on his phone and it's got all the pictures of all the interns and he has their names. And when he does a walk around with you, he looks at the thing and he goes, oh, Kanya, please, can you help me with what? So like simple skills like that, I find really like shine in pediatrics. And I think the last thing with pediatrics is I really love seeing how people rally around children. It's easy to get help for children. It's easy to improve information in communities that's going to help children. So when I say I'm having an event and we're talking about parenting, that was our biggest event because people want to help children and they want to take care of their families. So the monetary aspect, so I actually finished my specialization in September. It's now July, and I haven't actively been in practice because I think as medical doctors, we don't really learn the business of medicine. We don't learn the business side. So I've been challenging myself to go into that. It would be easy to open a practice and run that. But again, I am the business. So if I'm not there, I want to have another kid. Now I must now work hard for her, you know. That's not a good business model. So how do we create wealth that's sustainable, that's going to empower communities, but also going to make sure that I don't have to be on the ground all the time in order to make an income.
So currently, are you still in state?
Yeah, so I'm doing a few sessions here and there just to keep my, you know, like you said, you just need your clinical acumen to stay good. You still want to improve your academic knowledge, your CPD points. Hey, you know, that CPD. But it's just to kind of make sure that I've got my feet to the ground. And I still do engage a lot with the medical community. Yeah. I don't think, you know, there was a talk I did for EM Guidance as well, just on symbiotics and the infant's microbiota, etc. So I still really love clinical medicine. I just think also, you know, I was working for 9 years. Christmases, Easters, birthdays, New Year's that I had to give up. And I think I was enjoying, I just wanted a year of being able to say, Chomi, are you free next week? And I say, yes, I don't have to check our roster, girl. I've got a girls trip coming up at the end of August. It's so exciting because I didn't have to check my calendar. I could just be like, Chomi, I'm there. Yes, I'm coming. So yeah, it's also nice to have that. Sure, that must be a relief.
Yeah. Oh, Sister Bettina, who is our producer here.
In the meantime.
She wants to know what CPD points are.
Okay, so CPD are continuous professional development points. So basically, as medical professionals, even though we have a qualification, it's important to know that we are continuing our learning because doctors who qualified 20 years ago need to improve their knowledge based on today because AI wasn't as big as it is 20 years ago. There's a lot of data that has come out and research that has come out around various topics, robotic learning, even things that people know commonly like, you know, heart conditions. Yeah. There's new advances, new medications. So the idea is to ensure that healthcare professionals keep up to date by attending courses, ethics talks, and improve their knowledge consistently to improve their professional development.
And I'm behind.
You get it.
I hope they haven't struck me off the roll yet.
I saw something about an extension. I don't know until when, but thank you.
Yeah, I need that. I think we all need that. Any final sort of wrap up questions, Tlatla?
I think we
covered quite a lot in this interview. We
covered a lot.
Anything that you wanted to chat about, Kanyile?
Yeah, so I think I have a lot that I want to chat about. That's a very open ended question. So,
but something specific to us, to this podcast.
Yeah, I think when it comes to men's mental health, it's just to reiterate that I really encourage women to allow the men in their lives to create a safe space for them, but it's also a challenge to the men to make sure that you have communities around you that are accountable and also are, like, you know, quite honest and reliable. Because I think we want you to be able to perform at your best. We want you to have people who you can talk to, who come back with good advice so that you can love us better, take care of your families better, but also give us a safe space to love you and take care of you. And I think there's a lot of hype around toxic masculinity and all of that. I think the time now is for men to define what masculinity is for themselves, physical, emotional, financial masculinity is, so that we can kind of take your lead. And don't allow social media and stereotypes to define that for you, because that's the hype. That's the clickbait that people are going to go into.
Mm.
My challenge is to men. Mental Matters is always ready to have a men's mental health event. We will provide the venue. We will provide the food. You guys just tell us who you want to talk about. You run the program. We will send the videographers, who will be men, and we will leave the room. And I think what we want there is, you guys need, you guys know what you want to talk about. I mean, I could suggest topics, but then you're going to be like, you see, now there's a woman. You guys know what you want to talk about. And yeah, men's conference. Yeah. So mental matters, mental matters. And you guys take forward the conversation. And I think it would be an incredible,
I really think that that's it's a great, great idea, great initiative. We should. It's something that we've been talking about to do as the Gents Clinic, and to have a sort of, well, I don't like using the word men's conference, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
Maybe we should collaborate. Maybe we should definitely collaborate.
I have a date, I have a venue, I have food. Let's go.
Let's definitely do it. Let's definitely do it. And hopefully, sponsors, hey, if you're looking, we need you. We need you for this podcast. We need you for our conference. We know there's going to be a lot of men, and they have problems that we need to attend to. We clearly have a pandemic of young men who are depressed, losing their lives, have no purpose. And we're all trying to navigate this. And if we can do our part to help uplift our community, and specifically the leaders or the potential leaders that we want in our community, then we've got to, you know, work together to do this.
Yeah, I just want to honor you guys for having this space, because I think very rarely do we see three men with mics and we're just like, yo, take the mics away from the men. But you guys are actually talking about things that are impactful, that are actually going to help me, because I've even learned some stuff about topics that I haven't, number one, read up on as a medical doctor, but also as a woman. So thank you for creating the space for guys. And guys, please like, comment, subscribe, share. Yep.
And don't forget the sponsors. That's the main thing. yeah. Like, share, subscribe, all of that stuff.
Where the money but, resides. But
we can't do this
resides.
For free forever. You know, I know you see this painting, but this is a green screen here. There's no painting here. It's a green screen. Not someone's office, okay? Please. All right. Before we wrap, Kanya, what we like doing is reacting to some random videos that Sister Bettina chooses for us. So let's react to these videos. Reaction time.
Don't use sunscreens. Still, millions of people use sunscreen. Don't use sunscreens. Still, millions of people use sunscreens. So somebody's not listening. They even slather sunscreen on their children. In May of 2019, the FDA issued a report saying that sunscreen chemicals, when used just one day, penetrated the bloodstream, reaching levels that exceeded FDA standards. One ingredient, oxybenzone, reached that level, exceeding the standards, after only 2 hours of use. This is not good. These chemicals change your complex metabolic machinery, they put a load on your liver and your kidneys, and they make you sick. The more sunscreen we use, the more skin cancer we get. Do you suppose there may be a cause and effect relationship? The sales of sunscreens have gone up by 38 times in the last 30 years. Meanwhile, the incidence of the most dangerous kind of skin cancer, melanoma, has doubled since 1982.
Because white people don't use sunscreen. You know when people just use bogus stats to just like...
What's the evidence? What are you looking for?
Causality does not equal...
So I'm still trying to process what that meant.
Correlation doesn't equal causation. Like, what? You're going to come and say, the 38 times more in the last 30 years.
So I just want to say, as a melanated person, I use sunscreen. Because I understand that, one, when I go in the sun, it damages my face.
Yeah, but also,
it burns my skin in the sun. And three, also, I want to play in the sun with my child. Now you're telling me that my child's going to get melanoma. Melanoma is not a... No, you know...
Yeah, but you're melanated, but you're not like Nhlanhla melanated.
Yeah. I don't need sunscreen.
You're not like 90% cocoa. You know that.
You need sunscreen. Don't do that. Don't do that. You need sunscreen, please. No, everybody needs sunscreen because you need to protect your skin. You are going to age, sir. I mean, black don't crack, but you will age.
But we don't crack. We don't need sunscreen. But sunscreen is good for you. Sunscreen protects.
Wait, but
sunscreen
can't.
Okay, but does anybody know what oxybenzone? Can you pull up what is oxybenzone?
Also, who's that guy? And
yeah, who gives him the authority to tell us about oxybenzone? Oxybenzone could be lovely.
Wait, but listen to this one, okay? There is actually stuff that is in sunscreen that is endocrine disrupting.
Okay. It's,
remember we talked about all McDonald's? These things. Yeah, that's
so
also
is
true.
Alcohol.
Yes, that's why you should not
that's
take
why
McDonald's
you shouldn't eat
and
McDonald's
alcohol.
Every day.
First
you
of can't all, say, sir, I don't eat McDonald's every day. That's slander.
Yeah.
Secondly, I mean,
or drink every day, right?
That's also
like
slander.
How do you live without alcohol?
But sunscreen, if you're looking at the volume of the sunscreen that you're putting on, yeah. I mean, I would want to know what level of oxybenzone needs to be in your blood every day to be toxic.
Okay, but there's an alternative, right? Mm-hmm. So there's sunscreen and there's sunblock. Mm-hmm. Sunscreen will like filter the UV rays, mm-hmm. right? Then you get like a safe amount or something. Then sunblock will reflect it completely.
Oh.
Sunblock has like zinc oxide, right? Mm-hmm. That's a better alternative. Zinc oxide
but why would you
rather than
block
this
completely?
Thing.
I mean, there's a reason why you need sun as well. There's
yeah, but the problem is people are going like they'll go on holiday once a year to KZN and then they'll burn themselves, right? Then you need to do that.
So the way you
yeah, but like you need to like have a daily exposure where you don't burn yourself. Then you need the sun, right? That's a healthy exposure to sunlight.
When right, yeah,
when it's true. Unhealthy, then you're just going to cause melanoma that way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we see the next one?
How to be brave? How can I love when I'm afraid to watching you stand?
For those of us who don't have children and have just witnessed this, how do you guys feel when your kids have like go and get injections?
When my child got the vaccinations, I couldn't go in. My husband Flo had to go in and stay with. I couldn't.
Yeah, you have to as a gent. They must know. They must know. It happens, this thing. Actually, what I want to know in terms of flu vaccines.
Yeah.
At what age can you start considering flu vaccines for
from kids? The age of 6 months.
6 months.
Yeah. Ooh. So 6 months onwards. And then depending on the age, if they're less than 9 years, they get 2 doses. And then if they're older than 9 years, they can get 1 dose.
I see. And flu vaccine, I'm guessing you get every year, right? For
yes. So it's important to know that like with the flu vaccine, they will change it depending on the strains that they think are going to be more common because there's like lots of different influenza strains. Mm. So every year the vaccine changes. And also important to know, getting the vaccine doesn't prevent you from actually getting the flu. It just reduces the severity of the illness. Mm. And especially for young kids or people who've got immune, you know, suppressant medication or immune affecting conditions, it's very important that you also who are around them get the flu vaccine to reduce their chances of getting ill.
Mm.
I always say to my patients, it's like giving your body a memo to the exam.
Yeah.
You know? Tell you a little memo, you know, act like you don't know what's coming. You know, when you get it, you're like, hey, I know you.
I know
so,
you.
So, yeah, vaccines.
Sister Bettina just wanted to know why do they have the baby x-ray set up like that? So basically, it's because you don't want them, they can't sit still. So
well,
by
well,
taking
it's
away,
a combination
you just
of things, right? So the one thing is it improves our view because if the arms are in, babies are a lot of fat. So if their arms are in, those shadows on the arms would kind of look like masses. And especially in kids, if we're looking for like cystic lesions or effusions, that those shadows could affect our view. Two, when you pull the arms up like that, it opens up the rib cage. So it gives us better views, especially of their heart and lung shadows.
So how do we do it in South Africa?
We just hold their hands up.
like sometimes it's like sometimes you see the mom's hands in the x-ray.
Yes. Yeah. We just literally hold the kids
wrestling
up
with their child.
Yeah.
The mouth is open.
Yeah. And so in bigger kids, they like hug something and they kind of like stand like this, the same way adults do. Yeah. They kind of stand like that. But yeah, we just hold them and we rock. And sometimes they're crying, so we try to kind of time it when they go so that we can get that inspired film. The radiographers in South African hospitals.
Yeah, number one, legends. Those guys. Legends. Yeah, next video.
Look at it. Can you tell me not to look at it? I'm normally on the other end of the needle. Not now.
Hold on. See, that's what you got. So,
hold on.
See?
Can you turn your head? Oh my God. I'm not ready. Here. Oh, you bitch ass. I swear to God, I hate you so much, Gertie. Oh my God, I hate
We're
you
done.
So much.
1, 2, 3.
You for real? Yo.
Look at the tattoos. What is that? I don't understand.
I'll hold it. It's alright. It's okay.
He had to do his whole arm tattoos.
It's not going to hurt.
You got it. You got this.
Seriously, you do. Look at me. Just look at me. Who would ever do this in a store or CVS? It's gonna happen. It's gonna work. There you go.
You got it. You got it.
There you go.
You got it.
Fire.
Okay, I've got a question. Nhlanhla, out of all of those of us sitting here, who would you trust to put a drip on you first time, first shot? Green Jalko.
Me, really? Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
No, actually you.
Yeah, actually you.
You. Wait, what am I saying?
I just thought ED.
Yeah.
ED, you do that a lot. Mm. But actually you must be.
Yeah, you must be fired. Like,
proper.
Yo.
Yeah, intraosseous even if you fight it. In your bone. Rockets. Okay, and then who are you? Okay, no, let me not ask that one. I don't want to cause
No,
problems.
Ask that one. Ask
who
the
Who do you trust the least? Because honestly, you trust me and Suhail. So the last option is
himself. He trusts himself. In his.
Would you ever drip yourself?
No,
like,
no,
you
no.
Know,
I
drip
myself.
On call. Yeah,
is
we've
it?
Got
I've
gastro.
Right, myself.
I had gastro on a call once. I had to, I said saline, 1 liter. I was fading.
You dripped yourself.
I dripped myself.
What size Jelco?
Obviously, you know, I went a bit lighter. I went with the blue one.
Yeah, she's in Pete's. She goes with the baby ones. Me, green.
Oh,
I feel like
I have a high propensity.
Wait,
I've dripped you before, sir.
Yeah, he's also dripped me. I have a high propensity for being an IV drug user because I don't know how comfortable I was looking at my arm and putting it in.
I would have loved to be the person who walks in on the like call room to see you just
finding yourself. Yeah, exactly. With the glove.
Let me tell you, one day I had like the worst. I don't know if it was a flu or I was getting a pneumonia or whatever. I took the stuff and I went home, took a hanger, hanged the hanger next to my bed and put in the drip. Woke up fresh. Wife was shocked. She walked in the room. She was like,
What's going on?
Is this
but I won't even like, even like taking care of your own family members, because my daughter recently had got sick and she was like really sick to the point where I'm just like checking sets and like giving nibs and I'm like, do I need to take you into the pit? Because I don't know, like, what's going on here. Am I underestimating how sick you are?
Yeah.
And this hun is running around the room, and every now and then she'll, like, cough. And I'm like, Awena.
Maybe that's a pneumonia there.
Yeah, that's a bronco something there.
Yeah.
Sure. Do we have any more videos? Okay, well, that's a wrap. Thank you so much.
Yes,
thank you so much. I really enjoyed this episode.
I
definitely think we should have you back on, maybe even as a regular guest.
Mm.
Sometimes it's just nice to have a and now that you're unemployed, this could be a place, you know. I'm ready to step down, in fact. I'm ready to retire. I think you could sit in this chair, say my exact intro line, 6 South African male medical doctors. And me. But no, thank you very much for joining us. I really had a blast on this episode. We'll see you guys next week as always. That's it from me, Dr. Sahil Issa, signing off.
Vilagazi, out.
Naseem Sharif.
And Dr. Kanyile.
We don't always have a doctors, just doctors.
And I promise I was going to tell, I promise I was going to do a new outro. I told Naseem I'm doing a new outro. I don't know if this is going to sound cool or not, but hope you guys penetrate your partners like you penetrate the world. See you guys next week.
What the hell?
Thank you.
Can we do my one?
Yeah, we can.
Mine is just good evening, everybody. Oh, is it evening or morning? When do you guys release the episode?
Evening.
So we can go, like, because I say good morning to everybody. Yeah, so it would be nice to go, good evening, everybody. But we all have to do it together.
Okay,
let's do it.
Three.
One, two, three. Good evening,
everybody. And good night. See you guys next week.